Thank you so much for the kind introduction, and I really appreciate you all taking time to attend our session today. Some of the times the last speaker has a lot of words, and either that person has to hurry up or take its own sweet time to talk. I promise you I will run through quickly. This is an ongoing study that me and a couple of other colleagues are doing, but I'm presenting the part that we have already completed. We are trying to study what are the social and healthcare policies on breastfeeding, what are some of the norms that are, you know, present, how modernization has crept into our societies, into our culture, into our health behavior, and what impact does it have on the child health, you know, mortality, child health nutrition, and overall child health growth. I had some technical problems and the slide was updated, but I will disclose that I don't have any financial disclosures or anything. This project is completely an independent project. So the brief outline of our project, this presentation is present some outline about breastfeeding and child survival, present you a little bit about what data we have used, walk you through some of the methods employed, results that are still incoming, but what we have so far, and what are some of the policy implications of this study. When we study a lot about child health, you know, Millennium Development Goals now translating into Sustainable Development Goals, we have paid a lot of attention on mortality, whether it be neonatal mortality, infant mortality, child mortality. But what about the kids that are surviving? What is their nutrition level? What is their overall growth? And breastfeeding has been documented as one of the most economic, most safe, and most easy method to, you know, improve the child health nutrition and also child health mortality. But in times, you know, there has been a lot of modernization, and I will describe in a little while what we classify as what is modern. We wanted to study what is the impact of modernization, what is the impact of people's behavior change, whether they want to engage in breastfeeding or they do not want to engage in breastfeeding. One another challenge when we work and look at data globally is, it's not that people do not initiate breastfeeding. Most countries, when you look at the data, there is an initiation of breastfeeding, but exclusive breastfeeding and continued breastfeeding as per the WHO directions does not sustain well in many countries. So primarily our objective was to understand what's happening, what are the reasons why this is happening. And as we all know, as mentioned on this slide, the impact of reduced breastfeeding translates into reduced nutrient intake, immunological protection, birth spacing, and an increased exposure to pathogenic agents through contaminated food and water. Breastfeeding initiation rates are high in many countries, but exclusive breastfeeding is still a very uncommon practice in virtually most of the developing countries. We wanted to determine the extent to which modernization mediates the impact of breastfeeding and recommend some policy actions. We used the latest demographic and health survey data for most of the countries that are in our project. And for this presentation, we will be focusing more on Kenya and India. The reason right now we are focusing on Kenya and India, Kenya was one of the countries, probably the only country for some time, that had a negative development towards child mortality. In the sense, all other countries were progressing, even if the progress was a little shorter or, you know, not very fast. But Kenya, for a certain period of time, was one of the countries that experienced increase in child mortality. And India was chosen because it is one of the economic powers. It is no longer classified as underdeveloped or developing countries, but when you look at some of the health statistics, it does not perform well compared to many poor developing countries. So to study a multiple countries, we initially have started with India and Kenya. We looked at the DHS data, which collects much detailed data about the maternity history, the breastfeeding practices, the mortality rates, what are the housing conditions, what are the kind of behavior the mother and the family engages in. We did some bivariate and multivariate analysis. A composite modernization variable was created. Now, the child's circumstances were considered modern if it was associated with at least two of the following. Mother at least has a secondary education. Household standard of living is high or living environment is good, and we use the principal component analysis to create a household wealth index. Those of you who are well versed with DHS, it does provide information on what kind of roof they have, what kind of, you know, floors they have, what kind of animals they have, what kind of devices and things they have. But it does not give you a direct income or a wealth knowledge. So we did use the principal component analysis and created a wealth index as well. We also included the urban setting as one of the criteria. Whether the mother uses a modern contraception. In many countries, breastfeeding is still considered as a method of contraception. So if a mother uses modern contraception, we classified that as a criteria to be considered modern. Otherwise, the circumstances were considered as non-modern. For the control variables, we did include marital status of mother, religion, age of the child, sex of the child, which was very interesting to note in India, because India does have a little bit of a gender disparity when it comes to child mortality, child nutrition, with a very high focus or very high preference for a male child. Birth size, preceding birth interval, birth order, and tetanus injection during pregnancy. Some of the explanatory variables included in the models were the length of breastfeeding, place of residence, maternal education, household wealth, contraceptive methods, source of drinking waters, vaccination coverage, medical treatment of diarrhea, and medical treatment of cough. This is the statistical model equation, which presents that, you know, we took the log of the variables there, where X1 and X2 are dummy variables for breastfeeding duration and modernization. We did have an interaction with that. And the Z's are the covariates associated with child survival, and the B's and C's are the respective regression coefficients. What our results show is that breastfeeding duration is significantly associated with all modernization variables other than household economic condition and medical response to illnesses, which was very specific in India. Again, we have to understand that this is more of a very quantitative analysis. But when we are finalizing the report, we will be looking very specifically into some of the specific social and cultural factors. Myself, coming from India, I can attest to some of the cultural factors that happen in India and how breastfeeding is not completely a mother's choice, but your mother-in-law, your family members, your community, your religion might play a very, very strong role. Breastfeeding duration is generally longer among the less modern subgroups compared to the modern ones. And one of the analyses that I did for India in the state of Kerala, one of the states in India that has performed exceptionally well compared to the rest of the country. This is a state that has a very high, very good statistics and very good data about child mortality. But once you start studying the state itself, you will see that there are intra-state variability, where you see that because the literacy rate of women is very high, it is close to 99 to 100% women are literate, and because they engage in activities outside the household, the breastfeeding rates are much less. And after a certain number of years, you see that the child health status actually affects the, it's not in a good direction, because they do not keep the child on the breastfeeding for a long period of time. Overall, the median duration of breastfeeding is more or less a month longer among children in less modern categories as opposed to those in modern ones for all variables except for contraceptive methods and urbanization in Kenya. The impact of breastfeeding on infant and child mortality is strong and negative. The impact becomes even stronger when other important variables for child survival like nutrition and reproductive factors are controlled for. The longer the duration of breastfeeding, the greater the reductions in child mortality risk. The risk of death was 95% lower for children breastfed for at least 6 months in both Kenya and India. The effect of modernization is also strong and negative, but wanes with the addition of control variables. In Kenya, the beneficial effect of modernization reduces from 63% in a model that controls for breastfeeding status only to 57% in a model that controls for all identified variables that influence child survival, whereas comparatively, it was 63 and 38% in India. Modernization reduces the impact of breastfeeding on infant and child mortality. While the reduction is not substantial, it is greater in Kenya than India. This is something very interesting to note, where India has, both the countries have pretty high cultural values for breastfeeding. Modernization also reduced the relative impact of breastfeeding among children breastfed for at least 6 months by 6 percentage points in Kenya and 1 percentage point in India, although the India data for this variable was not statistically significant. Modernization reduces the beneficial effect of breastfeeding. Longer duration of breastfeeding is still important to child survival, regardless of the modernization status. Some of the recommendations from this ongoing study are: prolonged breastfeeding reduces exposure to hazardous environments, especially in less developed or less economically developed countries, thereby lowering the child morbidity and the risk of death. One of the things that also came out of my PhD thesis and some of this research was, many times in India when I would look at the data at the state level, we would see that we have a huge gender disparity. But after a certain age, you would see that the girls are not doing that bad. The reason was that because of an affiliation for westernization or modern methods, women would consider putting the male child on formula a much better choice, because that is something that is modern, something that is, you know, westernized. And that would result in then having the boys having a much poorer nutritional status compared to girl child that was still breastfed, because that was considered a traditional or a non-modern technique, and because of the high preference for a male child, the male childs were put on formula much quicker and for much longer time. Promotion of breastfeeding will have the greatest impact when survival conditions are poor, and breastfeeding promotion programs should emphasize early initiation as well as exclusive breastfeeding. As I mentioned at the start of the study, right now this is an ongoing project that we have limited to India and Kenya, but to be able to draw a conclusive evidence that breastfeeding or probably exclusive breastfeeding is important for child mortality, we will need data from some more countries. Just to recap my presentation, mothers and family members should be educated about timely initiation of breastfeeding. Provisions should be made to provide time, space for working mothers, as I mentioned the example of Kerala, mothers to breastfeed their children, thus encouraging breastfeeding, and breastfeeding should be integrated in the prenatal, postnatal, and other childhood programs. At this point, if anybody has any questions, I will be welcome to answer that, and once again, thanks for your attention.
Great, thank you as well, and thanks to the whole panel for some really fabulous presentations that were not only meaty and give a lot of information, but they were all nice and concise, and we now have time for a discussion. It can be questions of anyone on the panel, or if you have experience to share around the same area, by all means share it. Okay. All right, the front here.
If I'm married, so I left one for the calendar, so my question goes to Susan. So what happened with those who gave birth as positive labor?
I didn't study that.
So you are only focused on the positive labor?
Right. The World Health Organization is for the...
Can everyone hear?
Oh, very well. Yeah.
Why don't you come over here? Give me a question too.
The question was, what about chlorhexidine use in facility births? And the World Health Organization recommendation is only chlorhexidine use in home births. Now, in answer to a global question about what's the difference between a poor facility birth and an unhygienic home birth, they can be very similar, especially in a country that has significant problems with institution hygiene, you know, a hygienic institution, such as Haiti, especially post-earthquake, when many of the hospitals were destroyed. So is there a difference? Maybe not, but that's the recommendation, and we did our study just in the community. Does that answer your question?
So what the policies are the country level in Haiti? So is it adopting, you know, chlorhexidine after this delivery, or exclusively using chlorhexidine at the community?
Yes, there are some countries that are adopting chlorhexidine use in both facility and in home births. In Haiti, we are just at the policy level right now. There's a neonatal health alliance that is developing the new policy, not only just for Haiti, but for the whole Latin American Caribbean region. And so it is possible that they will recommend chlorhexidine use in both facility and in home birth. So, but that's country unique. Thank you for your question.
Yes.
Sorry.
No, that's great.
My question was that. My name is Dana Schauspolter. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
The first question was about the policy that Katie does. We already answered that. The second one, there's a project, I saw the emphasis on TDA being able to do the chlorhexidine application. Does the project have any kind of emphasis and or training field representatives and or what was the...
That's a wonderful, excellent question. And the question, the base of the question is, our research focused on traditional birth attendants who were trained by Global Health Action, but they were not skilled birth attendants, and that's a whole different level. And skilled birth attendants do not work in the region of Petit Guave where we're at. So we had 900 home births, and that's what we stuck with in that area. And so we did not go into skilled birth attendants. So yes, that would be the policy if it became countrywide. And not only just skilled birth attendants and traditional birth attendants, but those who don't have either of those, and that would go into the just village midwife, of who I know very well. And, yes, the policy, should it become countrywide, it would be for all home births. And thank you for your question.
I have a
yes, in front.
Thanks for your presentation. I just want to know, I know it's a medicine was provided free of cost, or was some cost incurred?
It was given to us for the study for free, yes. And it was donated by Drugfield, which is a pharmaceutical company in Nigeria.
So if a mother who has delivered at the institution, if she asked for it, were you open to it?
Oh, absolutely. So not part of our study, but part of the countrywide scale-up would be that it's available for purchase. And it's very inexpensive. I believe it's 27 cents. For a 20-gram tube, which allows for the 7 applications. And in our focus groups, we did ask if cost would be a barrier if they had to buy it themselves. And the majority of respondents in all the focus groups said that they would be able to afford that. And we were working with an area of very poor. So, yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Questions for other speakers? Yes.
Good morning.
No, back here first and then you. Yeah, go ahead.
My name is Jitri Wazor. I am working on the Nutrition and Security Program. I have two questions. One, related to the poisoning that we've worked on previously, and the other one is regarding the challenge on breastfeeding that has in Kenya and India. So for the breastfeeding use, I would like to know if you have a final project or if you already chose that in the MSFA approaching baby, how the training works, what kind of software you can give for the most vulnerable community where we have a lot of midwives. And the second one, I think both of you.
We'll do this first, and then you can ask the breastfeeding one. Yeah.
Right. So, as an answer to your question about pilot project, this was a pilot project for Haiti, and our group is part of the International Chlorhexidine Working Group, which provides technical support for all countries who have gone into the next phase past piloting, and so that's where we're at in Haiti right now. And working with policy development for the newborn, like I mentioned, not just in country, but then in the whole Latin American Caribbean region. So that's where we're at with that. And then, did I answer that component of your question? Okay, thank you.
And then Dr. Sani for the breastfeeding component.
The second is one regarding the challenge that you have with breastfeeding in Kenya. In Haiti, one of the main problems we have with breastfeeding, the lack of food insecurity. There is a lot of women with lack of food. So from the pregnancy
guys to breastfeed the children. Maybe they have enough milk, but they feel so, you know, uncomfortable. They don't have it. They don't have the food that they should have in order to keep healthy and breastfeed the children. I'm asking if you fight with that kind of challenge in Kenya, or how the situation is.
It's an excellent question, and that variable is actually prevalent both in India and Kenya. But the focus of this study right now was, if you are able to breastfeed, are you engaging in breastfeeding or not? That's a completely different variable than nutritional status of mother and whether the mother is able to engage in breastfeeding. But what we are focusing on this study is, let's assume that a group of women are able to breastfeed, whether they make the choice to continue breastfeeding exclusively or not. Are the modernization variables creeping in? Like, it's more hip to not breastfeed, it's, you know, more modern, I would rather use a contraception and not use breastfeeding. I know introducing complementary and supplementary feeding is more important, and that is obstructing the breastfeeding. We are not looking right now at the nutritional status, which you have raised a good point, is a very important variable both in India and Kenya.
One, I think another part of that answer too, which wasn't really part of your study, but I think there is pretty broad consensus that a woman has to be very severely malnourished to prevent her being able to breastfeed. You know, what happens is, you know, she may become more malnourished because of the breastfeeding. Some of the nutrients are really drawn from her into the baby, but it really is, she has to be pretty badly malnourished to not be able to do it adequately. So this lady here in the front. So what she's referring to is the way that the product is in the formulation, and what we used was a gel, and we came up with that because when we studied what they traditionally put on their cords, they apply it with their hands and apply those different substances. So we felt that the gel was the right way to go. What she's talking about is in Nigeria, they also had a liquid, and the liquid was dispensed in a bottle that could resemble eye drops. Chlorhexidine that's applied in the eye is extremely toxic and causes blindness, and there were four cases that occurred over the past year. And so the packaging of that, you know, is under controversy now, and whether it should even be in a liquid form. So yes, again, you know, I'm well aware, and I knew that before, and that's why we went with the gel. And the chlorhexidine working group is addressing those technical problems. Absolutely, it's horrible. Thank you. So the question way at the back, and speak as loudly as you can.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that first of all, we're not considering, in terms of comparing India and Kenya, especially is that Kenya is one of the countries where a lot of refugees from the war-torn countries essentially resettle. So that's part of why we're not seeing Kenya on the success of breastfeeding rates maybe related to that. And I'm wondering if looking at Kenyans, you know, Native Kenyans compared to, refugees or immigrants, what have you, and that's skewing from the data why Kenya has been performing really well for the past few years in terms of these outcomes.
That's an excellent comment, and I'm surely going to incorporate that when we expand the study. But right now we have been using DHS data, so whoever qualified to be as a DHS, you know, sample point is the one who is included in our study. But I'm sure that when we expand the study, we are also looking at the regional levels in the countries as well. As I gave you some examples, in India we do have examples from certain states, what's happening at the state level, and for sure we'll be looking at that at the Kenyan level too.
Let me ask first, any questions for any of our other presenters? Okay, go ahead.
Not really, because we don't have too much of data from that DHS data, but once we add external data, we might be able to, but not for this study right now, because that variable is not reported in DHS. What we are looking at is whether women are engaged in formal employment or what kind of employment they're engaged in. How many hours in a day is the mother away from the child in an that's what we are looking at, not their leave. But the percentage time in a day that the mother engages in the employment. Whether it could be formal, if it is formal, then we classify it as modern. But otherwise, if she's engaged in agriculture activities or other field work, then that gets classified as other employment.
Any other questions? I actually have a question for Dr. Lavin. I think your area of study, looking at not just how poverty affects, you know, health because of nutrition, et cetera, but how it affects use of services is probably an important one. And I'm curious about the whole picture of what you found about as far as child health outcomes, on you know, mixed in with the use of services. Do you, anything else come out of your study in terms of child health outcomes?
No, nothing more than I presented, but I do want to say this study was much bigger than even the slice that I've given you, and so there were a lot of other really interesting findings that emerged with subsets of the programming, such as how this potential model affected the community health workers in the community. We found significant evidence that this model of leveraging the groups reduced the burden on the community health workers. From the perspective of the mother leaders, what was really interesting is, so I think I said to you there were examples of really poor families self-selecting out and deciding not to participate. For those that decided to participate, when they couldn't pay that monthly contribution, we found a lot of evidence that the mother leaders for each of those groups, they would contribute on behalf of the poor families as a way to keep them engaged and keep them coming. But what was very interesting was for the mother, this created a burden for the mother leaders, who were often, you know, this was a rural area, they were often equally, you know, similarly poor. And so they talked about sort of the heartache of having to make choices for their own family while keeping other families engaged and coming to the program. Another finding that I wanted to share was around the ECD outcomes, which I didn't talk so much about. We found a lot of evidence, particularly qualitative, it wasn't so strong in the quantitative data, of the benefits of this program structure on early childhood development outcomes for the participating children. There were so many comments just about particularly the social skills that the participating children, you know, regardless of their household economic status, the social skills that they were developing, that these were, you know, they were polite and they could engage with adults and they could engage with other children. And there was so much value that the local community, both the citizens and the leaders, placed on this program. I'm hopeful they can address some of these issues that are leaving the forest behind.
Thanks. Any other questions? Do I get to ask another one? I was interested in Dr. Baer's presentation of, you know, I think we've all been familiar with many, many places where there are government health facilities and there are, you know, often church-based or private health facilities. And I'm just curious about, was there any sort of an assessment or has there been of the quality, comparing the quality of the two sets of services? Because, I mean, one assumes that the churches tend to have more resources. They tend to have, you know, more stuff and more, you know, better trained staff.
Actually, I don't think that's true anymore.
Is that not?
I think that would have been true back in the 80s when there were a lot more medical missionaries in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly in Congo, there was a huge exodus of the medical missionaries during the 80s and particularly when the riots of 1991. Practically all the expatriates left the country, mm-hmm. and many missions took that opportunity to not come back. So there was a real falling out of support. The church hospital still existed, the church facility still existed, but all of a sudden their support from the outside evaporated. And that was because, in a lot of cases, the support that the churches, the hospitals were receiving was in effect converted to the salary of that medical missionary. In other words, the Presbyterian USA would send out, would have several dozen medical missionaries working in Congo. Their salaries in dollars was kept abroad, and then they would receive local currency as their salary so that those dollars could be used to buy medicines. All of a sudden, those dollars weren't there anymore. The churches still, the hospitals still receive some local receipts, but what do you do with that? How do you convert that to hard currency to buy more medicine? So the since the 80s, the support for the church health facilities has not been all that stellar as we would compare in the past. So I would say that in many cases today they are more challenged than the state facilities. Mm-hmm. For instance, right now, 25% of the health workers in the country are actually on the government payroll. Of those 25%, 90% of them are in government hospitals. You know, the work to get more of the health workers on the government payroll, the attention gets paid to the government facilities, and the church facilities are left to on their own. So it's a challenge for both parts.
And your study certainly also looked at, you know, it really showed the really strong effects of, you know, social conditions and wealth and all those other factors as well, you know, as well as health services, and it may, you know, obviously they seem to have a major effect. Any other questions? Yes.
My question is to Brown. Your study shows that your guard retention was something around 68% at the pastoral level.
Yeah.
So what is the role of Ethiopian government in that making it further up and your
Thank you very much for the question. As you see from the chart and the project have come through that, the card retention is very high, and it is because the reasons that we saw from the study is that most of the cards after vaccination will be left at the health institution because the health workers will keep in the health facilities. That then we have tried to design mechanisms such as a plastic bag to use at the household level. This project is now continuing, so we have designing that mechanism and other using the community volunteers strategy. And the government, most part of the country is they are using the immunization card as a means of verification for the immunization services. But in some of the areas, like the highland areas, they are trying to shift to the what you call family folder, which comprises of different health services that every household will have that family folder. Then every history will be recorded on that document. So we are trying to do that interventions. Thank you.
Great. I think we're out of time. I'd like to thank our great panel for some very useful presentations and also all of your participation. Thanks very much.